Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on this incredibly beautiful Monday afternoon. We're going to the phones right now, continuing on with Dipper number one here, the big spend, and bringing on the phone with us right now, somebody who has lived through multiple terms in D.C. is former Congressman Mo Brooks, who served quite ably as the congressman from Alabama's 5th Congressional District. Prior to that, he also served in our state legislature. Right now, I understand he's enjoying lake life in retirement. Congressman, how you doing?
I'm doing great, and you're spot on. As I tell people when I give speeches, I break it into two parts. I say, hey, all you guys who voted for America, thank you for voting for me. And all those of you here who voted for one of my opponents, thank you for helping me have a funner life.
Yeah, the rub is you get to spend more time at the lake. That's just darn the luck. But anyway, well, how you doing? You doing well?
Oh, absolutely. Doing fantastic. I'm just looking out over the lake waters right now, watching people zip by in their boats, some of which stop to fish right near my shoreline. And it's beautiful weather today. Nice blue skies. Couldn't be any better.
Well, let's talk about cloudy skies, because this past weekend, am I correct in saying, by the way, that $95 billion in multiple foreign aid packages on a Saturday is not quite the norm in D.C.?
Well, it's not the norm, but it's happening more often than it should.
Yeah.
If not $95 billion for this, maybe a trillion for that.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, listen, I happen to know that you are indeed a fiscal conservative. Still one of my favorite moments ever is watching you slap down a news anchor who challenged as to whether you knew anything about economics, and you actually had a degree with honors from Duke, if I'm not mistaken, and sat her back in her chair. Let me ask you, first of all, your thoughts on the manner in which this came to bear. We had multiple packages. Now, the first thing on the floor, if I recall, was actually a bill for our southern border. But then it was followed by separate and unrelated or unattached appropriations bills, supplemental appropriation bills for Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel. Your thoughts?
I'm a firm believer that Washington needs something akin to what Alabama already has embedded in our Constitution.
Yep.
Each bill should be limited to one subject matter. When you mix motherhood and apple pie with the devil's doings, you're damned if you vote for it. You're damned if you don't. You enact good policy at the same time you're enacting bad policy. And that's why we've got so much crap flowing from Washington, D.C. So, no, I disagree with the process, but it is what it is. And you haven't got enough congressmen who are willing to change it.
Well, there's that. You know, the thing about Ukraine, the most controversial, I mean, our current U.S. delegation from Alabama was in there, and they were, you know, even with our Democrat, was unanimous on the question of aid to Israel, almost unanimous on aid to Taiwan, but split right down the middle. I mean, literally, actually, there were more against the idea of aid to Ukraine than there were for it, just from Alabama. And if I'm not mistaken, the Hastert rule still applies. And Speaker Johnson actually kind of blew off the Hastert rule and brought something to the floor that the majority of the majority did not support.
That sometimes happens. But I think Mike Johnson recognizes that Russia, Putin's invasion of Ukraine, has put America in a position where we have two choices. One is bad, and the other is worse. The bad one is what they did this past weekend, approving aid in significant amounts to help Ukraine defend itself from Russian aggression. That's bad for a lot of different reasons. But the worst one was not to approve that aid, because if you don't approve that aid, then you've learned nothing from history, and you've significantly increased the likelihood that ultimately American troops will once again be involved in Europe, and that World War III will break out. And that's because Putin, in my judgment and the judgment of a lot of others, is very Hitler-esque And he won't stop until somebody has stopped him. He wants to reconstitute the old Soviet Union. He wants to take on Poland. He probably wants to take back Finland, because Russia, sometime in the last few hundred years, probably had some occupation force there. And so he considers that Russian territory. He'd take back the Baltics. He'd take back the Balkans. He would go for Moldova. And we failed to recognize in the 1930s that Hitler was not going to stop until someone stopped him with military force. And so he did this four, five, six times in the 1930s before finally France and Britain said no more. But it took four, five, six times before the Brits realized and the French realized that the only way to stop an aggressive madman is with military force. If they hadn't done it when they did it, Hitler would have been that much stronger when he came directly at France and Britain.
Well, yeah, we can look back and see the original loss of Poland in World War II when Neville Chamberlain, before Winston Churchill became prime minister, when Neville Chamberlain did his appeasement tour. But let me ask you this.
It was Austria, it was Sudetenland, and one or two other geographic areas, all of which made Germany's war machine more powerful.
It did. It made the war longer, too. And it also led to the extermination of, you know, no telling how many Jews because of the
millions.
Exactly. Let me ask you this, though, and I want to make sure that we leave time for discussion of the speaker himself. But the Ukraine aid package, I think the thing that frustrates me the most, and I don't think this is just because of my own military background, but because I literally do not see a plan. I made the comment earlier, if Ukraine was a business and we were the bank, they'd be required to have references and a business model and a prospectus and a pro forma and lay out their case. And I get it. They kind of make their case, but we don't require them to show what they're doing with the funds that I can see. Is it better than what we're seeing, or is it literally just throwing money over there and saying, good luck, guys?
Well, it's much better than what you're seeing, in my judgment. I don't know about this particular bill, but past monies allocated to Ukraine, a significant majority of that's been spent in the United States, creating jobs in the United States. Now, those jobs are in the military sector, the defense industry. By way of example, down at Troy, that's one of the places. Up here in Huntsville, this is another place. But we build military equipment that is then shipped over to Ukraine. So that military equipment is pretty much going to go to their defense of their home soil, not just money being thrown out of helicopters, which is sometimes the way it's perceived or projected in the mainstream news media. And don't get me wrong, not all of it is spent in the United States on military equipment.
Yeah.
Some is spent on so-called humanitarian aid, which can be who knows what, and the accountability on that is just about as bad as the accountability on money spent at the southern border.
When I hear Biden, though, say, the goal is to be here as long as they need us until it's over. What are the milestones, though? What are the red lines? What are the moments in time that we're looking for, or what are the effects on the ground that we need to see to know that we have reached some form of homeostasis with this thing? Because right now, there's not a projection of what it takes to either keep us in or keep us out.
Well, you're an historian. You know that Afghanistan is, and the way we handled that, is what to a significant degree bled the Soviet Union dry, both militarily and financially, resulting in its collapse and it being split up into a much less powerful entity, many different countries, one of which, of course, is Ukraine. And as long as the Ukrainians are willing to fight for their liberty, fight for their independence, and bleed Russia, then it's to America's advantage for Ukraine to be engaged in that fight, using whatever assistance we can give them, than risking World War III, where our men and women in uniform are over there in that fight, coupled with the horrific risk that Russia would use nuclear or other weaponry on American soil. That's what we're trying to avoid. And as long as Putin and the country, Russia, is focused on Ukraine, That means they do not have the ability to invade Poland, which, by the way, is now asking for the stationing of nuclear weapons on its soil because of their fear of Russia. Finland, who has just been subjected to a movement of potentially nuclear-armed missilery being moved by Putin towards that border. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is to our benefit, but it's painful. The only thing we really want is peace over there and people minding their own business. But unfortunately, Putin's not going to give us that. So we're stuck with some bad choices. This is the better of the bad.
Well, that's a good frame of reference, and I appreciate it. Listen, I tell you what, Congressman, would you mind holding on during a break? Because we didn't get it. Okay, great. I appreciate that. We're going to do that. We're going to take a break right now. We're going to hold on with Congressman Mo Brooks. We're going to come back. I mean, this is a man who has lived and breathed in the halls of Congress, and I want to get his perspective on what's going on with our current Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like saving the world one soundbite at a time. Going right back to the phones right now with former Congressman Mo Brooks. Congressman, let me just ask you. We have a situation right now that is somewhat unparalleled in the removal or replacement of speakers. And just, I mean, it's almost like they're, you know, like changing socks. But for all practical purposes, everything we hear about our current Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, is that he is a fairly conservative and well-respected individual. And yet, once again, we have a call for his removal. Largely based upon the issues related to spending packages. Your thoughts on that, and what do you know?
Well, this effort does not appear to be substantive, which is contrary to the message of the national news media. You can file a motion to vacate, which is relatively meaningless, or you can file a privileged motion to vacate, which guarantees a House floor vote. See the difference? If you just file a motion to vacate, you're expressing an opinion, I think we need a new speaker. But you don't mean business until you filed the privileged motion to vacate. No one's filed a privileged motion to vacate. So why would someone file a motion to vacate? Well, perhaps they're trying to leverage the speaker into doing something by threatening to file the privileged motion to vacate, and pointing to the motion to vacate that's not privileged as proof that they mean business. So I suspect that Paul Gosar of Arizona, Thomas Massie out of Kentucky, Marjorie Taylor Greene out of Georgia, they are trying to get something else. They hopefully recognize the danger to the Republican Party of yet another vacation of a speaker, particularly when it's going to be so hard to get someone to replace Mike Johnson. I mean, Look at the last speakers we've had. John Boehner, no longer there. Paul Ryan, no longer there. Kevin McCarthy, no longer there. If they remove Mike Johnson, what's the message? Well, if you run for speaker and you win, you're effectively announcing to the world that you're retiring from Congress.
Well, and that's the way it feels. And I look at this and think, certainly, if you have a beef with a speaker, you should be able to air that grievance, and I know they do in caucus meetings and on the floor. But at the same time, if you want to remove the speaker 6-7 months before a major election at a time when we have a one vote slim majority, we're trying to get a little something done. It just seems like they could wait till the next Congress to even file the motions and stir things up, for that matter.
Well, you're talking sense.
Oh, sorry.
And some of these folks are not very sensical. You know, bear in mind, these people are disgruntled because they're losing some votes. That is not the House Speaker's fault. They're losing votes because they have not been able to persuade other congressmen to vote with them. Think about that for a moment. It's not the Speaker who is causing these votes to be lost, that these disgruntled folks want to win. It's because they have a minority position. And this is not the United States Senate, where the rules give an individual senator a whole lot more and disproportionate power. than he might otherwise have. In the House of Representatives, majority rules. And if you ain't got a majority, you're not going to win a vote on spending. You're not going to win a vote on border security. You're not going to win a vote on whether you want or don't want aid to Taiwan or Israel or Ukraine. So they need to do a better job of marketing their belief system that they're able to persuade a majority of the Congress to agree with them. And if they do that, you know what? They're going to win the vote.
Well, and that sounds like the way it's supposed to work. The outside optics are what keeps getting stirred. And I agree with you that the press is part of what's stirring this up. But let me ask you this. Part of the problem that our current speaker is also facing is that his majority keeps getting slimmer and slimmer with retirements that are coming in mid-cycle. And what's your thoughts? I mean, why are some of these folks going to the House when they could literally wait just a short amount of time before doing so?
Well, this is new to me. I was elected and sworn in 2011. I served for 12 years. And as best my memory serves me, not once did we have so many people voluntarily retire midterm.
Yeah.
When you win an election, you're signing up for a two-year term. And I've never seen anything like this, particularly when the majority is razor thin. And if the malcontents keep this up, well, they're going to get to try to file motions to vacate against the Democrat Speaker of the House, which will have no chance.
Well, and that's where we're headed right now. You can't. In fact, the majority doesn't get any slimmer than what we have right this very minute. Congressman, I appreciate you hanging on during the break and giving us a few more minutes of perspective on this. It's something to watch from the outside. I know you've lived it from the inside, and there are days I wish you were still there. But thanks for what you do, and thanks for your service to the nation.
You're very kind. Thank you so much. Have a blessed day.
All right, you too. Enjoy the lake. All right. Well, listen, we're gonna move on from that. We're gonna hit the next dipper here momentarily when we get back from the next break. The rise of the new Nazis. But yes, I will just tell you that, and I appreciate him saying what he said, and pointing out, rightfully so, that some of the $60 billion and other billions we're spending on Ukraine is actually funding things here in the U.S. But dadgummit, if the Biden administration wants an unlimited checkbook, they ought to at least be able to say, here's what we're doing with the money. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.